Chariot TechCast episode number 79, a show review of OzCon 2013 with Chariot's Sujan Kapadia. The TechCast is sponsored by Chariot Solutions Education Services. For training in Scala, Android, Maven, Spring, and more, visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com/education. In this show, Sujan and I talk about what happened in OzCon 2013 this year. We talk about movements such as big data, functional programming, and a whole lot more. If you're interested in day-to-day developer news, check out our Dev News podcast. You can also reach that at emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com. Just browse on over to the podcast tab and click subscribe. On to the interview. We began by talking about the tutorial tracks that he attended. So what workshops did you attend then for those 2 days? Did you do both days?
I did them both days. I did a R workshop. So R is like this, you know, big sort of like data science, data analysis, programming language, sort of right. Like SAS.
Yeah.
But it's based on C and Python. So there was like definitely a huge theme around big data, data analysis, R. So in a lot of different places. Basically made it clear that, you know, companies are hiring statisticians and developers for like predictive modeling, predictive intelligence. So that's something that like every company has in their arsenal now, and they're doing it. And it's sort of like, you know, you got to do it.
Yeah, and it's almost like a new...
So much data, there's so much stuff being generated. They need people to analyze it now. And it's just, you know, it's something that is not like a afterthought anymore. Really, like, you know, we have to predict where our company is going. We need to use these tools.
Right. And I mean, I guess at this point, you know, it's relatively new as a field for people like us, but... You know, if you were a statistician going in, you probably would have been using things like SAS years ago.
Yeah, definitely, like SAS, SPSS, a whole bunch of different tools. But yeah, it's something like, I guess they're now being considered programmers. Maybe they weren't before, so there's a lot more interaction between the statisticians and the developers now.
Right.
They have to speak to each other.
Right. And I noticed that they have a whole bunch of like little data science books that are like the 200 to 300 page starter kit books. In fact, there's a really nice data science startup kit. It's called Data Science Kit from O'Reilly, and they give you like, I guess it's 8 books. You know, everything, R is in there, the R cookbook and R in the nutshell. Python, machine learning. There's a good book on data analysis I've been flipping through. I don't know if you've seen that from them. Data analysis.
No, I didn't know about that kit. That's pretty cool.
Oh, you should check this out. It's like, the whole kit is like $100, and it's basically 8 O'Reilly books all around data.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're really good. I saw this like 6 months ago, and it was cheaper even then, so I grabbed it. And I'm like, all right,
yeah,
done.
We should get that.
Oh, definitely. We should have it in the office.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but
I think more and more companies are going to ask about that. It's something that we need to at least be able to speak about.
And it's funny because they're so ahead of the curve in terms of what people are talking about. Not to plug O'Reilly, but I do think that they are in this. They even have a book on bad data. It's called The Bad Data Handbook. Yeah, and the one on data analysis, like how to analyze with open source tools, MapReduce design patterns, data visualization. So if you're looking at data science, they have a really nice kit there. I'll have to post a note to that in the show notes. But
And R is one of the things that it's like more easily digestible by programmers because it really is a programming language, where SAS is sort of like this crippled programming language that developers don't like writing in.
Right, exactly.
And, like, Facebook uses it. Google uses it. Like, all these big companies are using R.
Oh, wow. Didn't realize that.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Good thing I bought that book. time to start reading it. Well, actually, we did a developer survey recently, and I know it's tiny amounts of data, but I was thinking of using R to pull that stuff in from a tab-limited file.
Yeah, I think Andy Oswald does some stuff with R, too.
Yeah, he likes it. He's used it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so data science was one. You spent some time with R. What else was that the main tutorial you did, or what else did you pull in?
That was actually just one of them. So another one I did was HTML5,
mm-hmm.
Canvas, called HTML5 Deep Dive in Canvas or whatever, or mm-hmm. HTML5 Canvas Deep Dive, whatever. But it's like, what can't HTML5 do? It's really freaking powerful now, and obviously everyone's using Chrome because that's the latest and greatest, supports everything, but... this is a really cool, it's probably the best tutorial I went to in terms of like being interactive and actually just writing code. We built a side-scrolling video game.
Cool.
Like a really simple one called Ninja Cat. Pretty funny, actually. And it was a cool tutorial. Like, he's sort of walked through Canvas, walked through how to do things. We sort of went through, like, you know, a very, very, very simple, like, template for a game engine and how that would be done. And then we just sort of incrementally started adding stuff and then did our own thing in between, like, breaks and stuff and tweaked it around with it. But, you know, it's HTML5 browsers have come, like, really far. You can do really smooth video games. They're, you know, GPU accelerated. You can't even tell a lot of these games. They look like they're just platform, you know, video games. It's amazing. Some of the examples he showed us. But that was an awesome tutorial. I don't know, like, you know, when I was growing up doing BASIC and stuff, it was pretty cool because you just open a BASIC interpreter, you could start drawing stuff and writing pixels and doing graphics and stuff. And I think we've come around back to that, but on the browser now. Like, you can get, a kid can just get started on, you know, learning a little bit of JavaScript, playing around with some of these libraries that sort of make, you know, abstract all that graphic stuff out. And it's a cool way to get, I think, children interested in programming.
Very cool. Yeah, that's a really good angle, actually. So overall, conference-wise, what were your big highlights?
I would say the big highlights were big data, so a couple. Big data, functional. There's an entire theme of functional programming now. It's mainstream. I feel it's mainstream at this point. Everyone needs to know it. Everyone needs to be able to either apply those patterns back to their normal OO language or use a functional programming language as a tool. But it's everywhere. And, you know, I think developers are, you know, definitely Java developers are sort of getting angry now. It's like, you know, I really want to use these things. You know, I'm tired of being, my hands being tied by Java. And my opinion, Java 8 is too late.
Yeah. And if you're going to go to something, wouldn't it be Scala instead of Java 8, for example, you know, to get
exactly. All
the power of Scala with their comprehensions and everything and compilation and better closures?
Yeah, so like Scala was a big thing. Scala and Erlang and Clojure. I think there are a few Clojure talks, not too many, but Erlang and Scala were really well represented. So I did the Erlang thing. There was an Erlang tutorial as well, like on Tuesday that I did from this company called like Erlang Solutions. Basically, the company that builds React, actually not builds React, but does stuff with the Basho people at React or whatever. But
okay. That
was an awesome tutorial. So I did Erlang. It's really wicked cool.
Very cool.
Scala's cool. Bruce Eckel did a Scala talk. So he did the Scala tutorial. That was really cool too.
Nice.
It was like an intro to Scala thing, and I've done a couple intro to Scala things. I'm like, I need to start doing something else. But it was Bruce Eckel, so I'm like, let me try it out. He's a good speaker.
He's a great speaker.
He's a big Python guy. He's like a diehard Python guy, so it's really cool to hear him support a JVM language.
Very cool. Yeah, very cool.
Their approach was each chapter is really, really short, like really short, and you just do like a few little things, and it's sort of like you feel like you've accomplished something. So he like completely boils down Scala. So his whole thing was, don't get scared by Scala. Everyone shows you this crazy, crazy syntax and people get scared by it. He goes, we're going to show you how to write clean Scala and not get scared by it. So he took a completely different approach, which is really cool.
That's what Rod Johnson had been saying when I interviewed him back in January. He was saying that, you know, you don't have to go crazy with insane hard to understand code. You could write well-written, well-designed, easy to read code as well and still benefit from most of Scala.
And you should. It's exactly Bruce Eckel's point was like, you know, you don't need to be too clever with this stuff. It's just,
right.
You know, it should be readable.
Use the power where you need it. Otherwise, you know. So that's cool.
Yeah, so functional was like, I was amazed by it. Every day there were functional talks, and that was like a big thing. So I think that's where things are actually going, and, you know, something that we all need to look at.
Right. I mean, if you use JavaScript, you should be using functional anyway.
Exactly. Now, I'll get to that in a minute. Like, so there was a really cool JavaScript talk on, what's the name of the talk? It was a new rule for JavaScript. So the guy did like a sort of, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Bill Maher.
Right. New rules.
Yeah. And he had new rules. So he did something like that with JavaScript. And it was really cool. And I think programmers need to just, you know, accept, you know, JavaScript is a full-fledged language. You can write good code in it. You know, just move on with your life. It's good. You can use it. You know, it's not, you don't have to look at JavaScript like some dirty, you know, dirty language or, you know, whatever. It's tons of code is written in JavaScript. There's tons and tons of stuff. There's a lot of Node.js stuff. Like it's a full-fledged language.
It really is. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at things like Bower and you look at things like NPM and all these libraries that have been cropping up. It's really, you know, where Ruby was 3 or 4 years ago, where tons of gems started getting published and people really started collaborating and building on each other's stuff. It's there now. I agree.
So I didn't get the feeling from anyone at this conference of like, you know, JavaScript is just something you hack with. No, it's a full language. There's lots of stuff out there for it. It also is evolving and maturing. Not every browser supports it yet, but I think a lot of people don't know about the latest and greatest JavaScript stuff. So that was a cool talk. Neil Ford did a talk, which was really good on functional thinking. So it's purely Java-based talk and sort of bringing functional patterns and ideas into Java. And I think I've actually seen this talk before. Maybe I saw it on InfoQ or something. I don't remember where. So it looked, sounded really familiar. But he was a good, he's a good speaker, so I like going to his talks.
Yeah, he's great.
But yeah, so that was a cool thing. You can definitely apply all that stuff to Java right now if you want. He borrowed a quote from Michael Feathers, made a great quote. OO makes code understandable by encapsulating moving parts, and functional programming makes code understandable by minimizing the moving parts.
Isn't that true? That's interesting. Yeah.
And so they're all, you know, multi-core programming is sort of like something, another thing that developers just have to deal with it. And it's like not something that, it's like, you know, that's something that people just have to start thinking about when they program.
Right.
Not something they can sort of leap to the side and think about later. So you can't fight Moore's law, right? But you can keep adding more cores.
Right. What could I do asynchronously and run as a background service and things like that, yeah. Right?
So they talk about, you know, Scala, Okta, and Erlang actors and that kind of stuff. I was amazed by all the Erlang representation out here. It was a big thing. And I've never played with Erlang till this week. And there's certainly, you know, Erlang powers like over 40% of all the telecommunications code in the world. So it's pretty crazy.
Is that because it's really good at like high volume, real time?
Yeah,
kind
high
of
volume, high scalability, extremely fault tolerant. So highly available, fault tolerant, very fast, very scalable in terms of, you know, being able to spin up a lot of things and do things like massively parallel. So I thought that was cool. Another big thing at the conference that was funny was what I like to term as the kitchen sink as a service. Because everything's a freaking service now. They have the platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, you know, software as a service, desktop as a service, so a whole virtualization, whole, you know, infrastructure. So everything being provided through the cloud. That was a big thing in the talks and the actual, all the sponsors and booths that they had set up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, there are so many cloud hosting companies. I was getting sick of it. There's like, there are probably like 20 different cloud hosting companies there that, you know, people that do infrastructure, people that will, you know, serve your desktop, virtualize your desktops, people, you know, give you, storage over the cloud. So many cloud hosting companies are popping up now. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I went over to CloudBees recently. We talked to them a while back about partnership, you know, disclosure for the podcast here, but, you know, we looked at them and I've been using them for the Rue in Action plugins that I built, or add-ons, I guess. And I went back and noticed that they've got their own little marketplace. You can add like probably a dozen different services. And I'm like, this sounds a lot like Heroku and five other things I can think of. There's a bee swarm that happens every time there's a new technology that really gets tooks in, you know? And it was the web frameworks, you know, 5 years ago, it was all web frameworks, JavaScript frameworks, dynamic languages, functional programming. But cloud, you're right. It's even crazier because, you know, there are so many companies looking at making money on hosting on the cloud. If you're not careful, I would guess you could probably add up to way more than a normal bill by using every little thing as a separate service, you know?
Yeah. And I think a lot of these companies, I don't know, I think they're just trying to get acquired.
Yeah, right.
What it is. They're small companies. And so you like Linode, for example. There was Linode was here, and there were like 10 other companies just like Linode, like that do practically the same thing. So that's there's a lot of competition in that space.
I like them, by the way. We're using those for the Chariot website rewrite. And
Very easy
to work with. Yeah. Well, for now. I mean, we're using them as a development node. And actually, they host the Emerging Tech site that I'm using now. But it's all WordPress.
Oh, cool.
You know, it's nice just to be able to quickly click and get your VPS running with no interaction at all. You know, go ahead and just configure it, add memory, add disk. But, you know, it's like you said, everything else does the same thing. But that's interesting. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
So now I would be remiss if I didn't mention open source, since this was the open source conference.
Sure. Hey, what about that open source stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. So in the same vein, along with this infrastructure as a service and that kind of stuff, all these big companies, they're open sourcing all their hardware, their whole stack. So like Red Hat's doing the whole OpenStack thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That whole like platform as a service infrastructure, like open source versions of all that, you know, being able to run your own private cloud service or whatever.
Right.
That's all being open source. Facebook is doing a big thing. There was a keynote on this called Open Compute, where they're trying to open source the entire stack, not just the software, but also the storage, the disks, the networking standard, the whole rack, basically, and the operating system, everything. So they're trying to make it so anyone can build, you know, basically build a data center. So they want to give you the recipe to build a data center from scratch. And that it's a huge, huge project, and they seem to be making a lot of progress. And along the way, you know, they write so much software that they open source out. So
and a lot of companies are doing that too. Yeah.
Netflix. So Netflix had a cool talk on scalability and stuff, and they open source a lot of their stuff.
Yeah.
Around scalability and monitoring, and then their build infrastructure and all that kind of stuff. Like, so it seems like every company is doing that now.
You're right. I keep running into companies where you think, well, this is a retail company, but then they're doing open source projects. I mean, the best example of that is really Amazon in a way, with some of their stuff.
Yeah, even a lot of their NoSQL. I mean, they wrote some seminal papers on NoSQL databases, which like every other company emulated and used
right.
to build their databases.
Right.
So. Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. Like they kept mentioning that over and over again. The whole, you know, open sourcing not just the software but the hardware.
That's cool. That is a really like the whole maker movement, so to speak. Of here's how we put our servers together. Here's what we use and how we get scalability. And it's like when you read those, you know, war stories from companies when they went down. I think people are a lot braver today about saying, here's everything we ran into when we host on an EC2, and when this failed over, this is what happened. So don't do this.
Right.
I mean, that's just an extension of that kind of concept too. That's great.
Yeah. And then there was one really cool keynote by the GitHub CEO. I'm trying to remember his name. Really cool guy. Really young guy. I didn't realize how young he was.
Mm-hmm.
But man, he's cool as shit. He gave a great talk on like culture, freedom, and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like sort of broken in. Like developers should do what they're happy about. They should be free to do what they're happy about as long as it's aligned with the strategic goals for the company.
Right.
Because that's sort of his philosophy and that's how they run GitHub. And he sort of doesn't issues the whole like hierarchical and management, that kind of stuff. He goes like managers are sort of like, you shouldn't need traditional management anymore. He goes, let natural communication patterns that form between team members, let that be how the company runs and things will, you know, it was really cool. You kind of have to be at one of those talks. It's tough to like sort of summarize it, but yeah, really energetic guy, really cool guy. I thought that was awesome. They did a bunch of talks. They got some really smart people.
Yeah, I've heard very good things about them. In fact, Joel and I have been talking in the Dev News about them recently. They kind of put a paper out there on how to properly license your GitHub projects because people weren't doing it.
Yes, glad you mentioned that. They made a huge point. Okay, that was an entire keynote. They made a big point about that. Tim O'Reilly made it. He's very passionate about licensing. He got up and talked about it too. And so there's a chooselicense.org. That's the website that explains you distills all the different licenses. It's from mm-hmm. GitHub. And then they've also added a license chooser to GitHub. So when you start a new project, you can automatically choose the license in GitHub and it'll put it in your project.
I just saw that today. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was a big thing.
That's cool. All right. So, hey, what's going on in Portland overall, though? What's the atmosphere like up there? You got good weather?
Oh, dude. Beer.
Beer. Yeah, of course. Beer. It's a famous brew town.
Oh, my God. Okay, so OSCON likes to, you know, provide a lot of beer, put it that way. Oh, my God. Every day. It's been a good week, man. So this week, there's a beer festival going on this week at the same time as OSCON. Coincidence? I think not. So we went there. A couple guys went there, actually, 2 days in a row. I went there for one day. But OSCON has a whole bunch of parties at the conference center, and then companies that are sponsoring parties in downtown. So we went to like a bunch of those. Pretty much every day after the conference, there's beer and food everywhere. Gigantic place with all these booths and everyone's, you know, all sorts of food and beer. I've never tried so many craft beers in my life. I was in heaven.
You have a favorite?
I like Stouts and Porters. I like the one from Rogue and another brewery called Deschutes. I love those places. And then we went to a bunch of breweries like on Monday night. Monday night was crazy. We drank a lot. We went out to like a whole bunch of places. And Tuesday we took it a little easy. Wednesday we went out to the beer fest. Yesterday we went out. But there's like 40 or 50 breweries in Portland. It's,
oh my God.
I think it's the most, some bartender told us, it's the most in the world. It's more than, second to Portland is Munich, Germany.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So yeah, that whole vibe was really cool. Portland is it's an extremely vegetarian friendly town. I've never been to a software conference where there's so much vegetarian and vegan and gluten free food. Pretty much, yeah. So they're big on that. Like they're pretty strict about that over here. Actually, they seem to be pretty passionate about all that. So that was cool.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. Well, I'll let you go. I know you got to travel back today. You got your closing days. Is there anything you're planning on attending today that looks promising to you?
I'm probably just going to go to the closing notes and mm-hmm. some stuff like that. I think there's one HTML5 thing again that I may hit on, but that's probably about it. We've been hanging out with a bunch of hacker spaces littered across the conference center. So sometimes we sort of take a break there and just hack on stuff.
Yeah.
Andrew's been doing that too.
Yeah. I got to get out there next year. That sounds like that's where I'm going. That sounds great.
Yeah, I think you'll have fun. Yeah.
Cool. Sujan Kapadia, thanks so much for giving us an update.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Sujan for coming on the show today. For more podcasts, including Developer News and the TechCast, visit emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com and click on the podcast menu. On the same website, we also have our screencasts. You can see screencasts from the last four shows that we have. These are full-length presentations with slides and audio. Again, click on the screencast tab, and you can watch over 30 screencasts of the Emerging Technologies of the Enterprise show that we had this April with a fantastic number and breadth of speakers. Send us feedback. We're available on TechCast on Twitter. Also, you can email us feedback at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. For the TechCast, I'm Ken Rimple.